Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Kernel of Truth. I'm your host, Brian O'Sullivan. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about storage solutions and how that's changing, how we feel it's going to change really for kind of middle-tier customers, but storage solutions in general. I've got product management here at QMS Linux. I've got some experts here with me in the room.
Hey, I'm Pete Lumbus. I run technical marketing here at Cumulus.
And I'm Dave Miles. I'm director of, I'm senior director of Ethernet switches at Mellanox.
Well, so in general, we're kind of talking about this a little earlier, and full disclosure, because of course everyone's going to realize this within the first 38 seconds of the thing, is I am not a storage expert, which will become abundantly clear as we get back through the things. But luckily, we've got some folks here to talk about it. One of the things was just sort of how is it changing and what sort of things we're seeing as customers are migrating to Ethernet-based storage and how that's changing in the in configuration, how it's changing in the world. So I don't know, David, if you want to talk about what you're seeing from customers. First, is that correct?
So there's you know, the numbers don't lie, right? So we see Fibre Channel declining every year, something like 8% every single year for the last 8 to 10 years. And Ethernet, it's growing, you know, fast. But what's funny is Ethernet's actually growing faster than storage or servers. And so some of the analysts will be like, well, why would that make sense? It only makes sense in the context that people are shifting from Fibre Channel to Ethernet.
Right.
And so, yeah, so we do see that as a trend. We see, you know, other trends. Like the people that are using Ethernet, who is it? It's, you know, cloud. You don't see Fibre Channel in the cloud. You don't see software-defined storage using Fibre Channel. And you don't see hyperconverged really using Fibre Channel. It's an Ethernet world.
Right. Well, I mean, that's true. Obviously, that's true in networking in general. And Ethernet's eating everything. And then I think we're seeing that then here as well. It's just kind of encroaching on everything that previously was there.
Right. But I think if you look, you know, why did people need Fibre Channel, you know, say 20 years ago? I guess it's been almost 20 years. I don't know. So, you know, Fibre Channel used to be more expensive than Ethernet because it was superior in many ways. It was lossless. It was low latency. It was provided by a huge ecosystem of vendors. And you look today and all of those things are flipped on its head. Ethernet is much faster. Right. Ethernet is now, with Rocky, it's lossless. And really, there's only two vendors making Fibre Channel. It's a duopoly at this point. So it's completely on its head. And then if you look at, you know, 20 years ago, there was no like public cloud. There was no hyperconverged or software-defined storage. And nowadays, all of those things rely on Ethernet.
Right. And Pete, I mean, is that also what you're seeing from a field perspective as well?
And I think if you look at the history of a lot of the storage stuff, right, it breaks down into your very small offices. We just have a NAS.
Right.
You know, you would have the Windows file share for your medium size, and then enterprise, their whole storage architecture was a full team of people running the storage network that was based on Fibre Channel. And I think just as we're seeing everything else converge onto Ethernet, you know, we've seen 30 years ago voice converge onto Ethernet. You know, now we're moving to storage because we have the bandwidth, we have the resources, we have the technologies to replicate a lot of those things that were required for Fibre Channel.
Yeah, and I think from a speed perspective, I mean the you know, as Dave mentioned, as you mentioned, the speeds are so much dramatically larger from an Ethernet perspective that if people want to push terabits of data, terabytes of data, they can certainly do so from an Ethernet perspective.
Actually, even on the storage side, if you looked at storage, you didn't know how you're connecting, and you just said, well, how fast is storage? It's not hyperbole to say that storage has increased in performance like 100 times,
right,
in the last, you know, handful of years. And that's because people have moved from spinning media to all flash drives. And a lot of that then means that they're getting super low latency, where before the latency of the network was like a rounding error to the speed of accessing, you know, the seek times of these spinning drives. Now with the, you know, people moving from spinning to like SAS, and then people figuring out, hey, I don't need SAS. I'd like to get rid of all those layers and I'll just put flash drives in a PCI slot and get rid of all of those tiers. That also removes all this latency as well. And so We like that for people that are pushing low latency networking, where before you could be, you know, many microseconds lower latency, but nobody could care because you couldn't detect it because the hard disks were so slow.
Right.
And I think that's one thing where talking to customers, you're starting to see them say, look, we can push 25, 50, 100 gig out of a server, which even a server doing processing seems crazy. But when you have like an NVMe drive writing directly to the NIC, you know, 100 gig out of that device is not insane anymore. And if you look at the bandwidth increases in the data center, you know, we've gone from 10 gig to 400 gig in five-ish years. Mm-hmm. And if you look at things like InfiniBand speeds, or I'm sorry, not InfiniBand, but fiber channel speeds, you know, they went from 1 gig to 40 gig in the same period of time. I think they just came out with a recent, I want to say 100 gig standard. But again, like you're talking about adapters that are 3 to 5x the cost of Ethernet.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. The price factor, and on that idea of the latency, you know, with this idea that NVMe drives are driving, you know, higher IOPS. Part of it is the throughput, and part of this lower latency to move from one task to the next. And so, one of the things we've seen this idea of NVMe fabrics, where you have a whole bunch of NVMe drives. One's in one server, one may be in the neighboring server. And so what these fabric guys are promising is that you can access a neighbor's storage, like from one server to another server, and you can't tell the difference between whether that NVMe drive is in the neighboring server or it's in the local server. But, you know, they can only make those promises if they have a kind of a modern Ethernet storage fabric, so something that uses Ethernet that's kind of built for storage, instead of, you know, they take that same NVMe fabric and say, oh, I'm going to plug it into my old Catalyst 6509. It's been working fine. They can't make those same claims, you know, like work. They won't stick.
And on a couple, one is just from a speed perspective, and then one is maybe a feature perspective or configuration perspective, just to ensure that you have the level of losslessness that you would expect from it. Right?
No, that's a great point. You know, there is this with NVMe fabrics built into the spec is this idea of losslessness. In fact, you have to have some kind of RDMA technology for NVMe fabrics. It's written right into the spec. And so, yeah, if you spend all this money on all flash arrays or NVMe drives, it's significant. And if you plug it into an off-the-shelf data center switch, you may not get your money's worth. In fact, your mileage it will vary. And so, and part of that is you look at, well, what is a data center switch? You know, it's built to connect servers, maybe on one side of the planet, to clients that may be hundreds or thousands of miles away. And, you know, the speed of light becomes an issue there. You know, the latency is huge. Where most of these flash arrays, the idea is that I am talking to a storage device that is in the same rack or one rack away. And so I start expecting, you know, again, that idea that I can't tell if it's local in my own server or neighboring. That only works if it's only, you know, a few microseconds away and not many milliseconds away.
You know, and I think that's an interesting idea that we see sometimes when talking about building these architectures, in which we end up thinking in human terms, which is, well, if it's in a different rack, like, that's far. And, you know, because we're used to that, you know, millisecond delay across a local network, as opposed to, you know, microseconds or nanoseconds to get from one end to the other. So I can actually do a reference from NVMe drive to NVMe drive across that fabric faster than I would have been able to do a spinning disk read inside of a single device.
No, that's a great point.
Well, but it also means that what you're doing is looking at the solution holistically, right? Or that you should be doing so. In other words, if you have your storage component and saying, I'm just looking at storage as storage and I've got this, to your point, if you then say, and I'll just pick up something I've got lying around and connect this storage together, if you're not looking at it holistically, then you know, as you were saying, your mileage may vary, but your mileage is going to be horrible, right? All of a sudden, you're getting a crappy MPG. I'm really going way too far with this analogy.
No, but you make a great point, though, because we have this saying at Mellanox, like, where do you draw the line? And so a lot of people are like, what the heck are you talking about drawing the line? It's like when you think about your new storage solution, hyperconverged or software-defined storage, whatever you want to think about it, if you draw the line around that and say, well, that stops at the NIC, or that stops at the server, the spinning disks, and you don't include networking as part of that solution, well, then kind of you've given up on a lot of the promises of these new kind of paradigms that say, right, hey, instead of building, like, because one of the new paradigms is, instead of saying I'm going to have like a 10, you know, or 100 terabyte system, and when I go to 200, well, then I've got to go to a completely different size storage. Instead, everybody says now, no, I grow incrementally. I add a little bit, and I add a little bit, and I add a
pay
little
bit. Pay as you
go. Yeah, pay as you go. I don't have to do these big forklift upgrades.
Right.
But if I say, no, my storage stops at my servers, then every time I want to increment that, then I have to go get permission or reprovision the network or get someone else involved. But if the network is included in your storage, it's part of that solution, then you're in control, right? You have the security you need. You've got the kind of pay as you grow as you need. And it's not incumbent on, you know, some other team to kind of manage your storage network.
Well, and to that, I mean, from a networking perspective, this is me trying to get back to a ground that I understand better than storage, talk about networking. But from a networking perspective, if you are looking at boxes and you say, like, well, we will need 10 gig speeds, and 10 gig is pretty fast for me right now. But you can get something that's 25 gig or 100 gig. That does ensure that if you want to pay as you grow later on with your storage, if you want to start pushing through massive amounts with it, you may not have to change your network architecture at all, assuming you architected with the vision towards that longer term.
Yeah, I'd like to make two points on that. One is, people think they don't need more bandwidth because they have no idea how much bandwidth they're really using. Right. So, like, they don't have good telemetry. A lot of people, they don't have the tools to know. And so New York Stock Exchange has this great page where you can go and see, like, what are the market data feeds? And what they would say, here's, if I check every second, I will tell you what the peak of that second was. And they would say, well, you know, all these market data feeds, they maybe use a little over one gigabit. But if you just change it and said, well, no, actually I want to sample every five, like, milliseconds, not microseconds, suddenly all the feeds, or many of them, are peaking way past 10 gigabits. Sure. And so what you, and nobody's getting more than 10 gigabits per second. So what you're seeing is buffering going on. And every time you went above what the physical line speed is versus what that is. And so without great telemetry, people have no idea how much bandwidth they really need.
Yeah, if I stick one hand into freezing water and one hand into boiling water, my two hands are at 50 degrees Celsius, precisely, right? I mean,
that's great.
It doesn't mean necessarily that I'm not going over one of the things. It's the you know, fun with math.
Now, I think one of the things that you're seeing in the latest generation of Ethernet switches that are out there are the flex ports that are facing down towards servers that can do 10 or 25,
right,
but with 100 gig uplinks. And so, you know, 10 down, 100 up is becoming extremely common because people are saying, oh, I don't need more than 10 gigs. Like, that's crazy talk. I'm not Google. But 100 gig up makes building an architecture very, very simple. I don't really have to do any math. And then I swear every customer I talk to within 3 months of them buying their first 25 gig port and plugging in 10 gig servers, I go, yeah, so we've got this new thing that does 25 gig. What do we plug it into? And I think that
you're like, good news. You've got a 25 gig port right there.
And I think what's starting to happen is people are realizing they are consuming whatever bandwidth is in front of them. And, you know, whether that's due to outage or because they're actually getting some telemetry out of newer systems, they realize that, look, we're always going to grow to the environment that is put in front of us. Right. When we had 1 gig, we're like, who would use 10 gig? Like, I have 10 gig links because I push 1.2 gigs of traffic on this link. And now,
right, and I don't want to lag. I don't want to deal with all that. So I'll just put it faster.
Yeah, and now we have, you know, 10 and 25, and people are like, 25 gig, I can't get that out of a server. And now you have, you know, the ability to do network offload to the drive, or you have enough cores in a system that pushing 25 gig or, again, up to 100 gig out of a server is now within the realm of possibilities.
Absolutely, yeah.
For companies that are not web scale. Right, you don't have to be Google. You can buy a Nutanix cluster, have that turnkey hyperconverged infrastructure, and start consuming 25 gig.
Yeah, so we benchmark this stuff a lot, and so what we would say is a single flash drive will be bottlenecked by 10 gig now, and that's just, you know, simple math. They fit, you know, with all the offloads that you have on the NICs, it's pretty easy to see that, and you know. So Nutanix is a great example, but NetApp actually now has a hyperconverged solution. and it's all flash, and they just build it standard with 25 gig, and they tell all their customers, for your best performance, please plug this into a 25 gig connection. And whenever people have less performance than they expected out of it, it's always because they just plugged it into whatever's lying around.
And that's, you know, you hit on something I think's important. How key is the NIC to these infrastructures, right? We're talking about the network, we're talking about bandwidth, but whether it's a smart NIC or a dumb NIC, how much of a difference are you seeing that make?
Well, coming from a company that makes NICs, like especially for that, and almost everybody that makes a storage solution uses Mellanox NICs. You know, we have something like 70 to 80% market share in the faster than 10 gig NIC space. It is important because there's a lot of offloads that aren't, you know, all NICs do certain checksum offloads and TCP, you know, certain offloads. But when it comes to storage, there's very specific things like the RDMA offloads, but also a lot of these storage in a box kind of solutions, they do something called erasure coding, and you can offload that to the NIC as well. So kind of that math, you can either burn up cycles on your, you know, x86 CPU, or just push it down to the NIC to kind of do it automatically. So there's a lot that NICs do to kind of accelerate storage.
Well, one of the other things I was going to say, I've seen, you know, coming from the software side of things, that networking has certainly, enterprise networking has certainly changed quite a bit, just because software architectures have changed over the last 10, 15, 20 years. There are changes that are occurring now in the software architecture space, whether it's containers, whether it's, you know, just complete use of VMs and everything else, especially with containers, where you're saying that there is no real state that occurs within a given container, and therefore there has to be something else not in the container that is doing that. Are you seeing that having a ripple effect with folks saying, well, because my software architecture, which, to be honest, is a large part of the reason people buy networking and storage in the first place for an enterprise, because they have really critical software things they must run. Are we seeing that drive changes in storage solutions and in storage for networking as well?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing real changes, but it's almost like two different parts of the market. There's the guys that are building a hyper-converged solution, so they want something turnkey and everything's already tuned for performance for them, and they want the infrastructure to be invisible. And those guys, they tend to buy few nodes that are very fast. So a very typical hyper-converged solution that we see, it's like 4 to 6 nodes. And so those guys don't need, you know, a 48-port switch. They would love to have a 6-port switch or an 8-port switch. And so they still need...
the speeds that they would...
Well, actually, they need more. Actually, right, it tends to be, instead of like many 10 gigs, they'll need like a few 25 gigs. Right. That's what we see more of. And so, yeah, small switches are perfect for them. But the other side of it is, you know, this idea of the cloud and microservices architecture. And it's weird because it comes right at the right time. If you start thinking about Moore's Law, and everybody's kind of talking about how Moore's Law has kind of fallen away because they can't keep turning the crank on the gigahertz machine and everything running much faster. Kind of instead of a scale out up approach on x86 servers where everything keeps getting faster and faster. Well, no, now they're adding more cores, or what they're doing is they're saying, I'm gonna take an application. And what does that application do? It does, let's say, 100 things, just to be simple. And I'm gonna split those up, and each one's gonna be in its own container, and they all talk to each other, sometimes in one server, but now more and more across a network. And so the network becomes way more important in this microservices model. And it really is happening just in the nick of time, because we are gonna see a lot more containerization as people do a lot more to kind of overcome, you know, the drawbacks of Moore's Law.
And I think from a storage perspective, you know, talking about the ephemeral nature of containers, you're seeing a reliance on high-performance databases, where the database is the file store. And so you see things like Cassandra. Redis is in memory, but kind of the same idea across the network, where the container is going to write to a database and read from a database and treat that as, you know, an operating system application would treat a local file or file system. Now it's a database read or write. And so now all of a sudden what used to be a local disk write is now becoming a, you know, completely distributed write across the network. And then again, coming back to something like hyperconverged, where you also have that underlying infrastructure performing a ton of east-west traffic because it's trying to cache and localize. Mm-hmm. So again, something like Nutanix, or I'm sure NetApp does the same thing, is I'm going to spin up a VM. The files that represent that VM may not be the server where that VM lives. So I have CPU on server one, but files on server two. The underlying operating system, that hypervisor, will actually take the job, the role of localizing those files to where that VM lives, so it boots and it runs faster. If it starts accessing a file frequently, it'll move that over to that, or move it into a flash tier as a cache, you know, or again, expiring a cache and moving it out of the flash tier back to spinning disk. And to try to optimize that within the cluster, again, you're pulling and pushing tons and tons of data in and out of all of these systems across that whole network.
Yeah. So from a, you know, we talked about the solutions themselves. From a complexity perspective, of course, you configure this thing, you've got this working, something goes wrong, theoretically. I've never worked with a product that's had a bug, but theoretically, I heard they're out there. So, you know, troubleshooting and dealing with that. And from a pure networking perspective, there's always challenges when there is this kind of, you know, ephemeral nature of this and things are moving and dealing with telemetry. What sort of additional wrinkles does that add when you're now talking about storage? Or is there anything that's sort of different?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of wrinkles there. I think this is one of those funny things where sometimes the requirements that people get, they think about storage and, you know, everybody's heard of RAID 1 and RAID 5 and these different levels of redundancy. And these new guys come along and they turn it on its head. They say, no, I'm going to use this erasure coding and I'm going to have redundancy in it. I don't need RAID and I don't need this. But like, the bank buying this, they've got a checklist and they say, well, I must have, you know, this redundancy level.
This was written by a smart guy years ago.
And yeah, therefore that was state of the art 7 years ago.
That's
and,
right.
And now these new things come in and they go, why would I do that? That's the old way of doing it. And so I think there's the requirements that sometimes really lag kind of the current state of technology. But also, you know, just getting back to how do you troubleshoot,
right,
is this idea of telemetry that says, you know what, if I'm doing an NVMe fabric, I shouldn't have any packet loss. And if I do, that's a red flag. But what if I'm having performance problems and I don't have packet loss? Well, you know, you need good telemetry that would go, all right, am I seeing microbursts? Am I seeing congestion notifications that are going through the roof?
Buffer overruns or
whatever. Yeah, all kinds of, you know, because there's, you know, really clever networking now can detect and avoid congestion, but at the cost of throughput, right? It says, hey, everybody needs to slow down. And everybody's slowing down, well, then the application's going to, you know, run slower. And so having the right kind of telemetry from the switch hardware as well as from the network operating system that can look at it, play it back over time, maybe look back, hey, how are things different a week ago versus today? You know, that's very powerful. And it's way bigger than the old, well, I've got RAID 7 or 5 or 1, you know.
And I think it's even that whole new model is RAID arrays exist, but it's not the drives within a server, it's servers within a cluster. And I think that's one thing where network folks, when they're still siloed, they go, well, a server went down and then our network bandwidth went through the roof. What just happened? And what's happening is that whole RAID array across that server cluster is rebalancing because it just lost one of its disks, right? And that disk that was actually 7 terabytes of storage on a full server system. So it's going to all of a sudden fan out and rewrite and rebalance that whole cluster. So now all of a sudden a server reboot that nobody cared about or nobody noticed
has a big impact.
Huge, huge outsized impact. And I think that's one of those, you know, to get back to all the way around of like, what are people doing? That's one of those places where we're seeing some customers are building single converged fabrics where everything lives on basically a single spine and leaf network. But we have other customers, especially for extremely large scale out storage. We had a customer with 98 racks of hyperconverged infrastructure. That entire storage network was a separate parallel spine and leaf network. Because they knew that if they lost a rack, that was going to be a huge amount of east-west traffic. And they're like, look, we don't want it. When that happens, we don't want regular data plane to be impacted. and we don't want that storage traffic to be impacted. So we're going to let them live on two different NICs, two different networks, two different pairs of switches.
But the good thing for what you're saying is that that problem, and by that problem I mean, what do you do if something goes down, and how do you ensure no single point of failure, and to bring another, that has been solved, right? There are, you can use Clos networks, you can use L3 architectures, again, from a networking perspective. So yeah, it's a little weird to have both your storage network and then your normal network. But if that is, you know, again, going back to looking at it holistically, if holistically that is the best solution, that is a fairly easily solvable problem from a networking perspective. Right?
And I think the biggest two things that we've seen there are on the really high end is something like Routed Rocky. So the ability to do remote Ethernet over an L3 fabric, which used to be an L2 only solution, and the rise of EVPN and VXLAN in the data center. So if you have those appliances or solutions that still require L2 adjacency to build a cluster, well, now I can let that all happen in VXLAN. All of the VXLAN stuff happens in hardware, so there's no additional latency.
Right.
The overhead of that NCAP is in hardware, so nobody cares. It's all transparent to the endpoint. But that endpoint can still be L2 adjacent across a scale-out spine and leaf. So I no longer have two big chassis, but I can have 4, 6, 12 spines and use all of that bandwidth simultaneously on a per-flow basis. So unless I'm having one very large file transfer, even the synchronization of, say, a whole cluster will end up getting fanned out across that entire spine and leaf network.
Yeah, you know, we talk about these huge clusters, but that same principle of saying, hey, I'd like to have a dedicated network for the, like, the server SAN, right? So whether you're talking about vSAN or with, like, Microsoft Storage Spaces Direct, it's kind of best practice to say, I have a back-end fabric that's for Rocky, it's for the node-to-node connectivity that can't get interrupted by maybe a vMotion or some other large burst of traffic. And so we see that's even these tiny little clusters. Scale is another customer that they do the exact same thing. They just recommend, hey, you may not need a large switch, but you need a separate little network just for this back-end fabric.
Yeah, and the one thing I'll say there that comes up over and over and over again is customers worried about that elephants and mice problem, right? And I think there's been a lot of clever attempts to try to solve that, but at the end of the day, the solutions always are infinitely more complex than it's worth, right? Like, I talked to customers about deploying MPLS traffic engineering within the data center so they can do things like storage replication. And I like look at the customer in the eye and I'm like, are you messing with me? Like, you're not, are you actually going to deploy traffic engineering? Like, that's a lot of, like, here, I have a better solution. Let's just buy 4 more switches and we'll just plug our database servers into those 4 switches and that'll be their replication network.
Right. And again, from a troubleshooting, speaking as someone who has scars of MPLS troubleshooting from many years ago.
I used to have hair.
And that's right.
Then I supported MPLS.
That's right. I mean, that alone is a nightmare. And if the answer is that, you know, I'm speaking from a product side, but if the TCO question is like, yeah, you will have to have extra switch bridges, we know, and it's not just getting MPLS for free. But if the troubleshooting for the spine and leaf and the telemetry of the spine and leaf is dead simple because everything is EVP and VXLAN, everything is standardized based, everything is Ethernet, and the other one is like something's going to go down at some point and you will never find that is just gone. You will never figure out what the hell happened.
You know, the other thing that's, I think, overlooked in that is I can take that parallel fabric and configure it exactly the same. Since they don't connect together, I can literally copy and paste my configurations.
Right.
Use the same IPs. Reconfigure everything exactly the same. Don't re-architect that second network.
Makes sense. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up. So thank you again for listening to the Kernel of Truth. We, as always, posting show notes on the Cumulus blog. We've got that there. We've got a bunch of other educational material that's available on both Cumulus as well as the open networking industry as a whole. And be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We'll be back later on, have more topics, more guests, and more things talking about open networking. All right, thanks.